Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome all of you back to the program. It's great to have you here, and a lot of basketball going on. Most of the conversation here has been about last night in Indianapolis, the inexplicable loss by the University of Kentucky. Some have called it one of the biggest upsets in college basketball history. In fact, Andy Katz, the noted basketball expert, said it was bigger than what happened 4 years ago when Virginia lost to a 16 seed, and that's the only time that's ever happened before. We also had Elijah Drinkwitz on talking about the spring game tomorrow. We'll try Don one more time. Don, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Good
to
hear.
Glad to hear you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, my question being, Blue Nation is probably feeling really blue by now. You know, I think it's good that Mr. Cal just be a man and just go on and step down. Don't wait to get fired. You know how they'll do things. And like at Florida State, no easy, you know, they're ready to get better, rid of Bowen, you know what I mean? And I think the baseball coach there, too. So Cal ought to just step down. His days as coaching a semi-pro league there is about over with, I believe. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know if that is the case, but I do know the frustration level today is very high. Eddie is up next.
Hey, Paul. Come on.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead, Eddie.
Hey, Paul, I just want to commend you on two great interviews you had. One was with Barry Sally, and the other one you had. But I like what they said about Texas A&M, Paul. And I have been saying this for a while, but, yeah, they're just a middle-of-the-pack program. And I love when these guys can call it like they see it and quit sugarcoating it. Because at the end of the day, Paul, he hasn't done anything. 5 years, getting paid more than Saban, talk a lot of smack about what he's going to do, and don't live up to expectations. So, two great interviews yesterday, Paul. You are the man, my brother. Roll damn tide.
Thank you very much. Ronnie is up next. Ronnie, you're on the air.
Yes, good. How are you doing, Ms. Paul?
Ronnie, we are doing well. Thank you.
Good. This is the first time I called, tried to get through and finally got through. I want to talk some Alabama football. I know right now a lot of people are down on Alabama, but there are probably about 130 schools that would be happy to only have two losses in 2 years. You know, as Alabama fans, we expect them to win them all, but we still have a great team and great coach. And also I wanted to talk about the Southeastern Conference maybe realignment when Texas and Oklahoma comes to the
yes.
conference. This is a suggestion that Auburn is geographically further east of any team now in the West Division, and they probably should go to the east. And Texas and Oklahoma be in the West. And maybe change it from an 8-game conference schedule to a 9-game conference schedule.
Well, Ronnie, I think that's the 9-game, I think, is reality. I think the rest of it is still up for conversation. Thank you very, very much. Ranger is in Knoxville. You're on the air. Hello, Ranger.
Good afternoon, sir. Hope you're doing well.
I am. Thank you.
Good. Do you know what's not being talked about in Knoxville today?
I don't.
getting stepped over and not becoming a two seed. It showed up last night with Kentucky. So glad to be where we are at number three, and looks like we're playing good ball. Hope Big Orange continues on a streak. I had a question for you. When you were with the Beacon, did you ever get to know or interview Stu Aberdeen?
Yes, absolutely. He was for you know it obviously, but for those who don't, he was Ray Mears' top assistant, considered one of the great recruiters of that era. He's responsible for bringing in two All Americans from New York.
Yeah. What was his disposition to you?
I liked him very much. He was, I mean, again, you got to remember, I'm 19 or 20 years old, and he's a successful coach. So it's not like he viewed me with too much respect. I was an annoying college sports writer. But he was always very nice and cordial. We used to fly with the team, so I got to know him very well, being on the plane with him.
Well, good.
And I thought he was a fabulous. He left Tennessee and became a head coach somewhere, and then he died. But he was a phenomenal coach.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Growing up, I thought he was the meanest little man on earth because he had in the summer. You know, he had the Tennessee basketball camp,
right?
And that went for 5 days, and unless you broke your arm or serious injury, there was no calling home, no parents coming to get you. and he wore a whistle,
right?
But the whistle was attached to a leather strap, and you would be doing something in drills or whatever. And he would just wear the backside of your legs out if you messed up.
Hmm. And by the way, I wish I had known that. I could have written an article about that. We'd have taken care of him once and for all.
Yeah, I think I was 7 or 8 the first camp that I went to, and first 2 nights I went to because you had to stay on campus. And I think that I know that I went to bed crying, thinking, what in the world is this? And it was kind of a precursor to boot camp, if you will. But
yeah, you know, Ranger, that would have never happened today. But I mean, I knew him only from a reporter coach standpoint. I remember him always being nice. He never hit me with his whistle or with his leather strap. Thank goodness. He wasn't that big a guy, though. I'm not sure that he would have intimidated me. Dale is up next in Kentucky. Hello, Dale. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. I want to know what your perspective on Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats.
I'm perplexed because, like a lot of people, I thought they were a Final Four team, and I wasn't quite prepared to go to bed last night thinking about them being out of the tournament. So I don't doubt that Cal can put a great team together, but I'm beginning to doubt that he can make a run in March. He has failed miserably doing that in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, my perspective is I'm from Kentucky. It's like I just don't think he's a coach. I mean, he can't say that he hadn't had any good players, because he has.
Well, but Dale, since 2010, nobody in college basketball has had better players than him.
Right.
Nobody.
So it's like, I just believe
In that period, he's had 3 number one picks. I mean, I'm not talking about first round. I'm talking about the top pick in the draft.
Right. So it ain't the players. It's kind of be the coach.
Yeah, the only person that's even in the same league is Krzyzewski, and he's won at least 2 titles in that stretch. And I just think, somebody made a good point earlier that, saying that he should have won four titles is really not a stretch. The 10 championship he let get away, I always thought that was one of his best teams with Cousins and so many other great players. And we all know about Anthony Davis in 12 and the 15 team underperformed being undefeated and losing in the semifinal. Julius Randle. He just had – it would be like Nick Saban – having one title at Alabama versus six. I don't know. I don't think there's another comparison. The programs are very similar. I'm well aware basketball is a different sport. It's a tournament sport. But somewhere in by any other standard, he's had an amazing career with four or five Final Fours and countless Elite Eights. But he was on the verge of making everybody forget that he hadn't won hadn't been to the Final Four since 2015. He got a pass 2 years ago when he had a really good team and didn't go there. He got a pass last year, and this year he delivered until last night. And now I think there is a lot of shock and awe going on in that state. We'll talk to the lead columnist at the Lexington Herald, John Clay. He's covered the beat for more than 40 years. He'll be with us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
John Calipari in that clip that you guys saw on TV talking about blowing an 8-point lead. He's done it before. He had an 8-point lead on a national championship game when he was at Memphis. They went into overtime after blowing that, and of course, he lost to Kansas. So we are talking about John Calipari probably more than we intended to today, but that is the reality. It was about a week ago as we sat in the sun in Tampa. We were joined by John Clay, the columnist for the Lexington Herald, spent 40 years on the beat and writing a column covering this team. And John told us the optimism and the enthusiasm that existed concerning the outlook for the Cats. Since we talked to him, Kentucky lost to Tennessee. And then, of course, last night. John, thanks for being here. We really appreciate it. Give us your view of the state of Kentucky basketball under John Calipari on the day after.
Well, Big Blue Nation is not happy this morning, Paul. They weren't happy last night, obviously. To be a number 2 seed, lose to a number 15 seed. It's happened just the 10th time that's happened, and I think 145 occasions. And for Kentucky to be one of those 10 teams, never mind the Duke and some other, marquee names have also done it as well. But Kentucky doesn't like to see their name on that list, especially with this team. Like, as we talked about last week, there was a lot of optimism, enthusiasm about this team. Then they lost to Tennessee in the semifinals of the SEC tournament. But even then, people said, okay, well, they just didn't, their shots didn't fall. They were 2 of 20 from 3-point range in that game. Tennessee. You know, Tennessee's a good team, but, you know, everything will be fine when we get to the tournament. And then to lose to St. Peter's, a team that didn't even win their own league, they had to win their conference tournament to get in, your 17-point favorite and your Kentucky, and to lose that game, it was pretty shocking all the way around.
I'm really interested in what you observed down the stretch. I was sitting there with my wife saying, don't worry about it. This is Kentucky. They will come back. And I'm sure that's the mindset of anybody that watches this program, because it usually is Kentucky that holds on and doesn't blow leads. So what happened, John?
Well, if you go down the stretch of this team, they ended up going 5-4 over their last 9 games, and they got into some close games where they were just not able to execute at the end of games. They lost at Arkansas 75-73 in kind of the same scenario. As we mentioned, they lost to Tennessee in the SEC tournament. And this has also been kind of an NCAA tournament habit for Cal, not just with Memphis, as you mentioned earlier. If you go all the way back to the 2015 Final Four game against Wisconsin when they were 38-0, they couldn't execute down the stretch. They ended up losing to Wisconsin. A couple of years later, 2017, North Carolina, they lose that game in the Elite Eight on a buzzer beater. 2018, they lose by 3 points to not a very good Kansas State team in the Sweet 16. And then in 2019, they couldn't execute down the stretch, end up going overtime with Auburn, and they lost to Auburn in overtime. So this is not the first time this has happened with the John Calipari team, not just in Memphis, but here. Another thing last night is poor free throw shooting. You know, if you go back and look at Cal's NCAA losses, there's a common thread there as well. And then last night, they were just 1 of 6 from the foul line in overtime. And to me, that kind of says something about, you know, you got a team that's letting the pressure get to them, or it's too tight down the stretch. So this isn't the first time not only, as you mentioned, in Memphis, but it's not the first time we've seen this happen at Kentucky either.
And, John, I realize you hear from a lot of people, and I'm sure you saw them last night, and you've heard from them all day today. You know, we have two here in a different environment where we don't know who we're hearing from, but there's a lot of anger out there, and I'm just trying to juxtapose the raw anger with what you've said and the reality that Cal is under a lifetime contract or whatever it is. Is anything going to change with his job status in the years to come, or where is he right now, other than someone who looked like the most secure coach in the country now that Mike Krzyzewski is on his way out?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think anything's going to change with his job status anytime soon. I think part of it goes, you know, it's obvious, and we talked about this last week. I mean, it was easy to get spoiled by the way he started here, by, you know, the first from 2010 through 2015, they go to 4 Final Fours, they win the championship in 2012. You know, you're going to get, you know, your fan base is going to get spoiled by that. But another thing, too, I think, is that during those years, for example, from 2010 to 2015, they had 9 players go in the top 10 of the NBA draft. Since then, they've had 4 players go in the top 10. They have not had one since Kevin Knox in 2018. And I think after last season, when they went 9-16, Cal shook up his coaching staff. He brought back Orlando Antigua as an assistant coach. He brought in Chin Coleman with Orlando. They've both been on the staff at Illinois. They both have reputations of being excellent recruiters. I think Cal realized that his recruiting had slipped some. He needed to get better in his recruiting, go back to the level that he was recruiting previously. And they've got 2 top 10 prospects coming in for next year. So, I mean, it's not, as you know, to use a football term, it's not always the X's and O's. It has a lot more to do with the Jimmys and Joes. And this was a good team. I don't think it was a great team. Could they have gotten to the Final Four if they played their best and gotten some breaks? Absolutely. But they had to have everything working in the right direction for them to do that. And for whatever reason down the stretch, they were not able to do that. But, no, nothing. I don't think anything's going to happen with John's job status anytime soon.
And I think it would be absurd for that to happen, except for what we're hearing, and I'm sure what you're going to hear. So, I mean, it's always the day after the season in Kentucky, John, the enthusiasm for next year is always there, because this is happening and that's happening and this guy's coming in. But at some point, if you can't get it done in March, it has to weigh on you, does it not?
Well, I mean, yeah, you go back to Tubby Smith. You know, Tubby Smith won the national championship at Kentucky in 1998, and after that he went to the Elite Eight 3 times but couldn't get to the Final Four. And then he was basically, you know, shoved out the door to Minnesota. As, you know, we said before, Kentucky likes to go to the Final Four, and if you get a stretch there where they don't go to the Final Four, the fans are not happy. And John, you know, Calipari obviously knows that, and they know that as well. But, and the other thing, the other factor with Cal here is that the reputation of being a coach, one and done, a lot of the fans have not been happy from that standpoint. They don't like the one and done players. They think sometimes Cal is more worried about getting players in the NBA about than winning banners. And you know, what they're about is winning banners. They want to hang banners at Rupp Arena. They want that ninth national championship. Of course, I think Cal's argument to that is you have to have elite talent to be able to do that, and that's what I'm trying to do, is to get the best talent in here available. But a lot of fans are grumbling, and that seems to be increasing with each year, about that they don't like the one and done. They don't like having to learn the roster all over again. They can't connect with the players. And a lot of that, because they're not here very long, but a lot of that's the way college basketball is today. I mean, Kentucky's not the only program that has one and done. They just have had more of those than most programs have.
John, finally, I mean, there have been some rough moments. I mean, Cal had a number one team. Actually, it was before he got there, I should say. But Kentucky has lost in the first round going back many, many years. They've lost in the first round of the NIT. Tubby had a team that I think lost as a number one seed. Others right. have as, or maybe it was Gillespie. I've lost track. But the bottom line is this. last night just seemed different. Describe last night and juxtapose that versus everything else you've seen in your coverage of Kentucky basketball for 40 years.
Well, in my lifetime, I thought the worst tournament loss they had was way back in 1983, I believe it was, when Joe Paul was the coach, and they lost to Middle Tennessee in the first round.
Right.
If they had won, they would have played Louisville, and that was at a time when Kentucky and Louisville did not play. Kentucky would not play Louisville, and there was a lot of pressure from Denny Crum to play, and that would have been the first dream game if that had happened.
Yeah, for some reason we may have lost John there for a second. We'll see if we can reconnect. We were going back in time. John, you still there? Apparently not. Well, anyway, we don't know what happened to the phone system in the Bluegrass, but what he was saying there, if we could, let me try to connect him one more. John, are you there? Okay, let me pause. I want to get that last thought from John, because I know where he was going. He was talking about some of the past problems in Kentucky basketball, and he was referring to a 1983 game against Middle Tennessee, and that followed 2 years earlier, or 3 years earlier. I think it was 2 years earlier, because I covered the game. When Kentucky lost its first game of the tournament against an upstart UAB, and then you flip the switch even deeper throughout history, and you know, Joe B. Hall left, and you had Eddie Sutton, and then obviously you had Tubby Smith winning a national championship, and then I believe it was in 2004 under Tubby Smith as a number one seed, they lost to UAB again, which was an embarrassing line loss. So these are things that have happened, that when you have a history like Kentucky, you are going to have these type of moments. John, I think you're back. I believe you are. So
yeah, I'm back.
Go ahead. I do want to get, you were talking about the Middle Tennessee game, and I went ahead with a far worse memory of Kentucky basketball than you, and went over a couple of other games, but continue on your thought.
Well, I mean, I think it would rank up there with that loss. I think it's probably worse than it might be worse, for, certainly from a seeding standpoint, the Middle Tennessee loss. Yeah, you mentioned that UAB loss under Tubby when they were number one seed. But last night it was like, you know, you kept thinking, okay, Sam Pete's a good little team, but surely Kentucky's going to pull away, and you kept waiting for it to happen. It didn't happen. And there were a lot of Kentucky fans there at Indianapolis, obviously, and it was almost like they were stunned themselves. A couple of times it was like they got into the game like they were trying to pick the team up, but you could sense that among them, like it was this among the fans, is this really going to happen? And then it did. So, and you're also factoring in they went 9-16 last year, so you're following a 9-16 team, 9-16 season with a first round knockout to a number 15 seed in the SEC tournament. No, it's like I said at the beginning, it's not happy times here in Big Blue Nation.
And finally, John, we don't know what's happening over these next few weeks, but you know, you have Tennessee, you have Auburn. Arkansas. Somebody may make a very deep, long run, and that doesn't help either. And beside that, you'll have six new coaches in the SEC. So you just don't know what the calculus is going to be. It shouldn't affect Kentucky, but that doesn't mean it won't.
No, that's true. And yet there were a lot of Tennessee fans here last night because Tennessee played in the same site. I was getting my colleague Mark's story. These Tennessee fans are going to think they died and went to heaven watching Kentucky lose in the same venue after beating them the week before. But, no, it's a competitive league. I mean, we've seen that by look at all the coaching changes where coaches were not able to win in the league and they lost their job. And you're right, that shouldn't affect Kentucky. But, you know, like I said, they got two top 10 prospects coming in next year. They have another one in Shaedon Sharpe who joined the team in January, but they elected not to play him. He was an early enrollee. But there's a lot of questions about will Oscar Tshiebwe come back? Who's going to stay? Who's going to go? You know, there's a lot of flux with this program going into next season.
John, thank you again. I know you will not have a quiet off season because this is a moment that will not go away. Always great to have you on. Thanks so much for making time.
Well, thanks for having me, Paul.
You got it. John Clay, the longtime columnist in Kentucky. This is a flashpoint, a moment that Kentucky fans will have a hard time forgetting. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And Mitch is up next.
Hello, Uncle Paul.
Mitch?
You ready for the weekend?
Yes.
Is it raining up there?
No.
It's raining down here. I'm calling because I have made so many bad phone calls. I have learned the etiquette for file mail callers. And yesterday I felt sorry for him, even though he deserved it. Elliot, the guy that had his podcast or whatever, he made one of the crucial mistakes. He spoke in absolutes. And when a caller does that, you're going to demand information to back it up. And all he could do is So never speak in the absolute on the Paul Feinbaum Show. Just speak in opinion.
That's good advice, Mitch. This is a venue of opinions. It's not a venue of law.
I have heard you grill your guest if they make an absolute statement, and you want them to back the statement up. So, I mean, it's not, and you do it to any fandom. So you're very fair about that. But you don't want somebody to call up here and say something is true and they don't have information to back it up.
So. Yeah, and he I believe if I remember the caller, he was talking about how the Big Ten is better than the SEC.
Yeah.
And he didn't have one scintilla of evidence to support it.
Well, Elliot, take it from a long-time bad caller. Don't do that again. You have a good weekend, Uncle Paul.
That might be your best call in a long time. Ron is up next in Pennsylvania. Hello, Ron.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
A couple of observations. But first, I'd like to say I have been a Kentucky fan since 1962, the years of Cotton Nash.
Yes.
So I'm pretty old. I've also coached high school and college for 35 years. I don't consider myself an expert, but I do consider myself knowledgeable. I've been able to watch most of the Kentucky games on TV over the last 12 years because of the satellite dish, and there are some observations I'd like to make.
Sure.
First of all, Kentucky's offense is very staid. It does not move. It is antiquated. Cal basically runs the same formations and the same plays, three or four of them, the entire game, the entire season, his entire career at Kentucky. When they run an out-of-bounds play underneath their own basket, it's always the same play. They just simply throw the ball into the short corner and play from there. Where if you watch a team like Tennessee, when they run an out-of-bounds play, they're running to score points. All right, most teams do that. Cal does not. Last night, St. Peter's went to a zone for a few possessions, and Kentucky looked completely lost. They looked like they had never seen a zone before. I believe Cal said in one of his quotes when I was reading the paper this morning that the zone confused the players. Now, I don't understand this. We're talking about, what, 34th, 35th game of the season? How can you be confused over how to attack a zone this far into the season? I think Cal's a pretty good recruiter, although I think he's dropped off in the last 5 or 6 years. I used to think he was a good motivator, but standing on the sidelines yelling and screaming at the kids constantly does not help. But I am questioning his X's and O's. I think his X's and O's and his adjustments in-game are absolutely horrible. And I don't say he should leave. I'm not saying he should retire or should go somewhere else. But I don't think Kentucky's ever going to win again during March Madness with Cal at the bench, on the bench, because it's so easy to scout him and so easy to prepare for his teams. That's it.
Ron, one question, as somebody who does have a lot of knowledge and experience, why does that catch up to a coach now versus the regular season where he has been so good? In fact, he beat Kansas this year by 20 points on the road.
Well, I think what happens is this team had a tendency to be streaky with their shooting. If they were able to run, they certainly were a lot better than the half-court game. Anytime they were regulated to playing half court, they struggled, and I think that has a lot to do with the sets. As far as catching up to him now, he has for the most part much more talent than everybody else in the SEC. I mean, I understand Auburn is very good, so is Tennessee, but over the last 12 years, he has had more talent, and I think simply talent wins out. When you get into the tournament, now you're talking better teams. And the coaches are probably watching a heck of a lot more film, and they're a lot more prepared. And I think scouting has a lot to do with it. And I'm not sure how much time Cal's staff spends scouting opponents. I don't know what he does, but I do believe that he's very easy to prepare for.
Interesting. I mean, that's a great observation, and no way anybody outside of maybe his immediate family could find any fault with what you've said.
Well, I appreciate that. I will say that I've been to Lexington many times to see them play. When I was coaching Division III at one point, there was a time back in the 80s where they never played over Christmas. They didn't have Christmas tournaments. They just give the kids 10 days off. So I'd be able to come down to Kentucky to see games. When Cal got the job, fortunately, he started bringing the team north. So I'd be able to go see him at Madison Square Garden or in Brooklyn. And that was nice. And we already had tickets for next Saturday's game in Philadelphia. But unfortunately, we're not going to be able to use those. So we're going to have to get rid of them. But, you know, it is what it is. And hopefully next year things will change. It is what it is. We root for them again next year.
Ron, thank you very much. That's quite an interesting observation from somebody who, as he said, coached for 35 years. Royce is up next.
How you doing there, Mr. Paul Feinbaum? This is Osage from Florida.
Great to hear from you.
Here we go. You know you and I got to talk, right?
I hope so.
Because you always put me, you always set me back a couple yards. Mr. Ron spoke the truth just then, and I've already put it out there on Facebook. That zone freaked them out. If you don't play zone, you don't know how to play against the zone. See, you got a practice squad, and then you got the starting, usually the starting 5, 6, 7, 8, or 5, depending on how deep you go. When they were smart, St. Peter's coaches were. When they threw, they already knew Kentucky wasn't hitting threes, so they threw that zone on them. You know what a real basketball player thinks when they see a zone? If you don't get inside the middle and kick it out, you're gonna have to shoot from the three. And they already knew Kentucky was missing threes, so they outsmarted Calipari and his mediocre staff at that point. Now, here's the main reason I'm calling. So many times I've got on the call and told you Calipari just don't. Why is he taking timeouts home, Paul? The simple timeouts, you can't take them. You cannot put them in that fancy $10,000 briefcase of yours and take them home with you. It's 21 seconds on the clock, and the game is tied up. Why are you not calling a timeout? And I'm not yelling at you, boss. I'm not. I'm yelling at the fact that this is the last time I will come on this show. I'm going to come see you, talk to you again. But this is the last time that I'm coming on here to make my point that Calipari just don't know what a timeout is. And let me it's kind of rhetorical. Here's why he don't call timeout, because he don't know what play or set to run to set up plays for his shooting guards and his player. Brooks can hit three-pointers. He was hitting three-pointers at the beginning of the year. You notice during the regular season, Brooks wasn't shooting threes anymore. That is Calipari holding back talent. You can't do that. You can't. If he can shoot threes, let him shoot threes. Carl Anthony Towns can shoot threes. Davis can shoot threes. They weren't shooting threes at Kentucky, now were they? And they recovered. Praise God that they recovered and they're making their money. But you keep holding back talent. You got Hopkins on the bench. You got Allen on the bench. You're not – Grady is a slasher, and he can get to the basket. Go to YouTube and look at his – go to YouTube and look at Grady's highlights when he was with Davidson. He was a star player. Calipari took all that away from him and made him be a shooter only, and that's why he got punched in the face last night.
Great call. Thank you. Two back-to-back great calls. We are heading to a break. More to come. It is Friday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
An update in the Feinbaum caller bracket. You can vote right now. You got Legend Matt, Red Dog John, Trey Andre, Larry Swami. And we head back to the calls at 855-242-7285. And Brock is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Brock.
Hey, Paul, thank you for taking my call again today.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to speak with you the other day. Just a couple of few comments and questions for you that I'd like to make. I watched Kentucky's game last night, and to me, it just looked like that Oscar Tshiebwe was pretty much the only player that was really ready for that game. He gave it his heart and let out. I don't know. Maybe if you feel the same way.
Yeah, he was the only one that seemed like he had some composure. The rest of them just completely lost it, especially when it mattered. And ultimately, that's the coach's responsibility. He has to get them ready to play. Cal talks a good game. He talked about how he tried to calm everyone down, and it didn't work. So whose fault is that? Lane is up next in Kentucky. Hello, Lane. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are well. Thank you.
So last night I was watching Kentucky play, huge Kentucky fan. And I turned the game off because I knew it was over. I sat there and I thought, when will Kentucky basketball get back to being the elite program they once were? Because I'm telling you right now, we haven't been an elite program in over 4.5 years. It's been, 3 years since Kentucky has been to an NCAA tournament. We had COVID that 1 year, but – you know, it's just we lost, and it's been a long time since John Calipari has proven himself to the team. And I sat there, you know, Kentucky's not going to fire Calipari. He has a $60 million buyout. They're not going to do that. It's way too much money. But Calipari has to change. Is he going to have a Nick Saban-type moment where he's like he admits that the game has changed and he has to change the way he coaches? You know, that's what I'm hoping for.
But Lane, I thought in terms of philosophy, he had done that.
You know, everyone says, even I'll see it, the offense he runs, it's out of date. The defense is awful. The offense is out of date. You have guards, you know, you pass it around up top, and then they dribble drive. But you have two big men down low, and you're clogging the paint. I mean, he's just running an out-of-date offense. Anyone will tell you. No one in the NBA runs it no more. No one runs it. It's just, you know, I think Calipari has to change, but is his ego too big?
Lane, thank you. We're unfortunately up against a break. It has been all Calipari for 2 hours, and none of it's good. We'll take a break.